and really became the most important thing to me. And when I was in law school, I, you know, got my divorce papers, and I had a meltdown, and I just within 8 days got 2 DUIs of each other, had an accident, you know, and so yeah, being trained to be an officer of the court and getting DUIs and having to be on the wrong side of the bar wasn't such a good mix. So I kind of withdrew from law school. And, you know, I was going to go back and all that, but right now I got to work and get busy. In the meantime, I wasn't introduced to anything. So the court gave me a little piece of paper. I had to go and get it signed in the AA meeting. So I went to the AA meetings, and I had no problem with that. You know, I'll do what you say, you know, to fix this, because I can fix it. And I got the paper signed. I went to the meeting. I listened to people, and I knew. Yeah, I'm just like, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I could say it. I don't know why I could say that from the first day. I'm an alcoholic too. I have this thing too. And I went to those meetings and I stuck it out for a while, about a year or so. And I fellowshipped, had a sponsor. And, you know, she was a really wonderful woman. And she, you know, took me to Fire Island with family and we had good times. And it was all good and we talked. On step one for about 9 months. I guess she said I wasn't ready to move along. And I'm like, okay, all right, I don't know. Sounds good to me. So then, of course, you know, about 9 months into it, I got to do something, you know. I got to move. I got to get a job. I got to make this happen. So I decide I'm going to move to New York City. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go work for a law firm. I'm going to go work for the best law firm. And I'm going to learn what it's like to be a lawyer and go back to law school. So that is what I do. I don't know. It was easy in those days, you know. As this thing sort of progressed and marched along, at first I could manage. I could recover physically. I could recover financially. And I could recover emotionally. Because it worked. And so I move along to Manhattan. I get a job at the top law firm in Manhattan. And I drink. And it just takes off. This firm, this New York thing, this is awesome. You get paid really good, and you don't have to work that hard, because it's so hard to live in Manhattan, you know. You got to, like, use the subway, and it's dirty, and I don't know. They give you a car service home, and all this. It was just awesome. And also, they had wine at the conference center, and I worked evening shifts. And it was really, really great to, you know, sneak back in the room where the computers were kept, and all the wine was kept for the partners of the firm to indulge a little bit. Well, I got caught doing that. In fact, I got caught doing it at about 9 a.m. in the morning. You know? So this isn't a matter of, let's see, 2 years from being sober dry to drinking in the morning at my job, an awesome opportunity that I was given to work at this fancy law firm with famous people, drinking in the computer room, getting drunk at work. So, of course, what could I do? You know, this is a problem. They were really confronting me, and they were really lovely about it. They were like, you know, you can get some help. Get some help, and we'll help you out. You know, you can go to a hospital or something. But, you know, for me, it was like, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get a better job somewhere else. I don't have to work with these people anymore and deal with me. I'll just go somewhere else. So that's why I did. I got a job at another law firm in Manhattan. Didn't drink anymore. Started to decide, you know, this is where I'm starting to manage everything. I'm starting to manage this. So I stopped with the hard liquor because I black out, like, really fast. Then I just wine. Then I black out really fast with the wine. So I stopped that, and I'm really just kind of getting to clear. But I'll tell you something. As I made these maneuvers and this manage this drinking thing, there are times when I remember, you know, I just want to drink. I hurt so much. I just want to drink. I don't know why I hurt so much, but I do. And there were times when I really forced it down, you know. I forced it down, and I took a drink and I threw up. And I knew that if I just kept forcing it down, if a little trickle got in, eventually I'd feel warm. I'd feel okay. and I would be able to drink to drunkenness, and that's exactly how it worked. So I move along at a job, and of course, you know, that just isn't going anywhere. They want to hire me on full time, or want me working as partner, and I'm like, wow, man, that's just, you know, that's not good enough for me. And I'm drinking like mad, so I decide, you know, what's the next thing I gotta do? I gotta go somewhere else. So now it's Philly. I got family down there, you know, I'm gonna go down there, I'm gonna move, you know, get sober for a little while, visit AA for a little while. You know, develop some friendships too. Learn a little bit about the fellowship. And I partake in the fellowship. I try a few other things to manage my moods, my ennui, my boredom, my restlessness, my irritability, my discontent. Eventually, I would lose me back to drinking, always. And so what I do is, you know, I limp along this way. I find a new career, real estate, lovely career for an alcoholic. I can drink. I can be hungover. I don't have to go to work. In fact, technically speaking, I'm unemployed. So I have a 100% commission job, and I just happened to get into it exactly the right time when the market was just starting to build up, and it was easy, and I didn't have to work that much. I could be pretty much a full-time drunk and a part-time real estate agent, and do pretty well, actually. Bought a house in South Philly, continued to drink, continued to quit, continued to go back to AA, visit AA, go to meetings, leave the meetings, drink again, just a little bit, you know. This is where, you know, I think I started to really experience, well, I always experience, but this idea that I learned about here, it's called powerlessness, and where, you know, I can't tell you how many times my house in South Philly, I'd go out to the corner store for one beer, you know. But I wouldn't get the 40 ounces, I'd get the 25 ounces, or 24 ounces. Because that's all I was going to have. Every night. And every night I would drink that. That'd be good. And then it'd get a little warm, get that feeling, I'm calming down now, and go out and get just another one, you know. And that wasn't the end of the night. The end of the night was, I don't know what the end of the night was. The end of the night was the morning looking for my car, not being able to find it. Door wide open, don't know what happened, don't know where I was. And that happened countless times. So now it's getting really serious. Now I really have to do something about it. What do you think I'm going to do? I got to move. I got to go somewhere. I'm going to do something about this, okay? I'm going to move. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to move to Charlotte, North Carolina. That's going to be the solution, right? So I do. I get this golden opportunity, another one from a family member, to go down, live down there free in this mansion. On a country club, there's nice courts, I play tennis. I did that. And I also continued to drink until I couldn't stop. I couldn't work. All I wanted to do was drink. And I got sober again in Charlotte, North Carolina. I went to AA again. I visited AA. Doors were always open. And they welcomed me. And I met some good friends down there too. And I experienced something that, I guess it's referred to as a mental blind spot. Down in Charlotte, I was sober probably about a year, going to AA every day. Also meeting down there, way home. And a friend of mine came to visit me. She was making her own cigarettes on the table, on the deck. And I was like, that's cool with me, you know, I'm sober, I'm all right. And before I knew it, I'm having some. And it's like, what just happened? Like, what just happened? Wait a minute. I forgot. You know, I forgot that I had this fatal progressive malady. I didn't know. I wasn't really aware that without any other solution that I would eventually, shortly, maybe a little bit of time passed, I would use again, without a doubt, like I know that today. I know that for a fact. Without any other solution, there's no way I would stay sober. And what happened to me was that when I moved back up, because, you know, it really wasn't working out too well in Charlotte, you know. Yeah, the economy was so bad. couldn't really sell real estate. So I moved back up here, and yeah, a friend of mine gave me a job. Yeah, this really amazing friend gave me this job. Another amazing opportunity, my best friend. Very best friend for many years. And I moved back up, and my best friend and I spent a lot of time together and drank. And yeah, it was easy, it was nice. And things just got worse and worse. I was keeping a really big secret. I forgot to say, in Charlotte, I did actually start to step to the sponge down there. And, you know, there was a couple things that happened when we got to step five, you know, so I wrote my inventory. And there was something there that I didn't put in, take to her in step five. Something that I was doing, I was unwilling to change and stop doing. And, yeah, I was having an affair with a married man, basically. Not just a married man, but my friend's husband, okay? And, to me, you know, everybody has their bottom. And, you know, you would think that mine would have been the divorce and the bankruptcy, the DUIs, but it wasn't. It was that. Because these people loved me, my friend, and I held this secret that I was capable of that kind of betrayal. And I had to be high. I had to be drunk to deal with that guilt and shame that I had. I couldn't stop the behavior, and I couldn't stop drinking. And so when I did move back up, the job with her didn't work out too well. In fact, the whole thing kind of crashed and burned, as those things will when you're doing that kind of stuff, you know. And that's what happened. So on October 17, 2011, that's my sobriety date. And the day before that, my friend, my very best friend for many years, declined to be my friend anymore. Yeah, forever. And I don't know why that was the thing when I woke up on October 17th, why that was the thing that made me think, I can't continue this way. I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this anymore. I guess I compromised my principles to a degree that I couldn't justify or rationalize it anyway anymore. I guess I woke up a little bit. And so on that day, you know, I had a wicked hangover. Well, I'll tell you something about that last drunk. I couldn't get drunk. I could not get drunk. I could not stop the pain that I was in at all. It didn't stop. I drank and drank and drank and drank. It didn't go away. I could still feel it. Stopped working. I had to do something. I didn't know what that was, but for the grace of God and this fellowship that I knew was here, I knew you all were here, and I knew I could go there again anytime, no matter what, no matter how many times I failed, I could go back there again. And maybe, just maybe, maybe the answer was there. It seemed to be somewhere. So I did. I went back to a meeting, and within about a month's time, I met a woman who offered to take me through steps, and she did. And, you know, that was the thing that was missing. I had an experience this time when I started the steps. I guess, number one, I guess I'll just use my own experience. What happened to me was I had a sense of real desperation that I couldn't live like that anymore. I just couldn't, and I was willing to do anything, you know. I was willing to walk through the AA meeting door again. I was willing to go alone, didn't know anybody. I was willing to do whatever it took. And when this woman offered to take me through steps, I said yes. I said, please, you know. Actually, I guess I asked her, and it was like, yeah, like a wedding proposal. She said yes, you know. She said yes. It's beautiful. And so she took me through steps, and so I learned about this disease, if you will, malady that, you know, it's physical, mental, and spiritual. I didn't know that. I didn't know that I had a physical allergy to alcoholism, to alcohol. I didn't know that when I put it in my body, I processed it differently, and that once I put it in, I couldn't be able to stop. seemed to see, seemed to be the case in every, almost every case, every time I drank. But I didn't know that was something that was defined, and I didn't know that there was a solution, and I didn't know that the solution was spiritual, or I simply didn't want to hear that. Because, shoot, you know, there's just no way God is going to fix this. How can that be? That's how cynical I was, you know. Because I could do it myself. I could do it myself before. Why couldn't I do it again? Why? With all my willpower, I couldn't stop. Years went by. It was a good 14 years from that first AA meeting until October 17, 2011. It was 14 years. DUIs. Swearing I'd never drive drunk. I did. Many times. Not only that, I totaled my car drunk and ran away. I did that. I did many other things I swore I would never do. I was powerless when I put it in my body. I couldn't control. I had no idea what happened. So, through the grace of God again, and God through others, all the people that have helped me, this woman that took me through my steps the first time, it was amazing. It was really amazing, you know. Wow, I wish almost I could have that experience again. No, I don't. But there's nothing like it. That first time of going through, you know, it's so exciting if you're starting out to, it's such an amazing journey that you're starting, and to be bold and ask for help and let others help you and let others cushion you, because it's scary and it's rocky, and you know what, it's going to be rough at times, but you'll have the help of others, and there's nothing quite like that for the first time, really seeing who you really are and getting to know who you really are and going through the process of understanding your alcoholism, the truth of that, you know, of really knowing the truth of that and accepting it. And not only getting to a place where you can accept it, but that you can bless it as a quality, if you will, a character, a part of your character that will help someone else down the road. And I think, you know, just going through the steps for the first time is brilliant. It's like falling in love for the first time. It's like driving for the first time. It's like anything you do for the first time. It's pretty amazing. It's new. And I had an amazing experience. And really all I can say is that I was just willing, I was very desperate, I was very willing to do whatever she said, and I did that, and I didn't hold anything back in my fifth step. There are things, she called them other harms, things I'll take to the grave, and I took them to her. Things I would never, there's one thing she said I would never tell anyone ever. I told her. And I can't even really tell you the experience afterwards, going home and sitting for an hour and seeing, asking if there was anything more. Nothing did come, but I had a sense of nothingness. And it's a beautiful nothingness. It's really more like the Buddhist idea of nothingness, groundlessness. It was egolessness, you know, for that hour, like I had freedom, you know, from that, from myself. And, you know, then marching along, I was of the early school and doing it relatively quickly. My sponsor saw fit that I went through the steps relatively quickly from where she saw that I was at. So I did that in a matter of a few months, maybe three, four. I went through the steps. I did, 6 and 7 to the best of my ability, no idea what they were or meant. I just took a list of like the 7 deadly sins, and I thought that's all they were. But as I grew in the fellowship, I learned a bit more about that too. So, but the initial foray into the whole deal was, you know, the 6 and 7 prayer, the 7-step prayer. I memorized that, was the willingness thing she asked me to do. And, I just gave a list of the 7 deadly sins and took care of those, you know, don't want those around. They didn't really go away by my own will. I thought they would by praying for them. And then I moved along to 8 and 9 and did the major amends. And there were some that I didn't really want to do, But I was reminded that I said I would do anything, that I was willing to do anything. And so I did that, and there were a few mostly friendly, I would say, understanding. Some people didn't remember, and some people were gracious, and some people were very loving and, you know, said, this is awesome, that's very courageous what you're doing. And some people didn't respond to me. And some people won't have anything to do with me to this day. And, you know, that was hard at first, and I learned a great lesson there, too. That's not on my time, it's on God's time. And I'll wait and see what God has in store for us. And, you know, marching along to step 10, one of my favorites, you know. So, good alcoholic that I would have had trouble getting step 10, you know. So initially I was instructed to, when something disturbed me, to call my sponsor or someone in the program immediately and discuss it with them. And I would rather sit there for 8 hours and like think about it and stew about it and get really angry and kind of try to blame somebody and then really get angry than just call someone and talk about it, see where I might have been wrong, see where I might owe an apology. So that was the hardest practice in moving along into 11 and 12. The most beautiful part of the program is that, I mean, the experience that I had today of the steps is amazing. So from that experience, what I'm saying is I got the tools to do what I do today, which is I continue to take inventory. I continue to improve my conscious contact with power greater than myself, and I practice these principles all my course to the best of my ability. And how I do that is from having done the steps. And I couldn't get where I am today by doing that. Just a few other things about the steps that were amazing. I did some things happened to me recently where I actually experienced what I call a 10-step in real time, where things happened with people. And it was just a situation where I could actually discuss it with people involved right away. And that was really amazing. I never had the courage to do that. I never had the strength of character to do that. And it's only through this fellowship and having done that work where I was able to do that in a kind, loving way, discuss something with someone, several people, actually in different situations, and be at peace with it. And that really was, I would say, the result of this program and such, is to, you know, get some peace with my fellow human beings, which I never really had before. That's a big result of step 9. I think also, you know, I guess a lot of people talk about this, but as I've grown and gone through things in this period of time that I've been sober and recovered, people say that, I just say that I'm an alcoholic and I announce myself because that's pretty much what I am, just like you, just like everybody else. But I had an experience, I'll tell you, I experienced this idea of recovered, and it does say that in our book, it says, you know, we're 100 men and women who have recovered. And you know, people argue, like, I'm recovering, I'm always working on this, or am I recovered, or what? I just kind of stay out of that and just say I'm an alcoholic, it makes it easy for me. But I remember I was sitting with my boyfriend, and he was talking about all these people that were doing drugs. And I remember just like, wow, you know, I'm just listening to this whole thing, and I don't have any feelings. I have no salivation, I have no desire. And I realized, like, wow, that must be what recovered is, you know? How did that happen? How did that happen? It's a miracle. It really is. It's a miracle of our program. And so just moving along now, I would say another super important step is step 11. And boy, I've been through so much of that because I was not a natural God version. That was my sticking point, I'd say, all through those 14 years, in and out, was I didn't get this God thing. Like, how is God going to help me? I don't understand this. I didn't really have any particular religious background or anything like that. I just didn't understand how that worked. And it's funny today because, you know, I try to spend time daily with God, or the God of my understanding. I try to develop a personal relationship with God. And it was a long process of the 11 steps. So it started out with the prayers, you know, the third step prayer. So I said prayer, practice that, it's what my sponsor told me to do. And then I was like, that got sort of stale or unofficial, and I tried other prayers, Christian prayers and other prayers, and I tried, and I also practiced Buddhist meditation, compassion meditation, forgiveness meditation, and that started to really have an effect of quieting my mind, because as I learned here, that the problem that I have, the disease of alcoholism, something I didn't know either, was that this thing, I thought it was drinking was my problem. That was my problem. I drink too much, and I get in trouble when I do that. And I didn't realize that wasn't my problem. That was my problem. The problem I had was how I think, essentially, and that I had no ability to control obsessive thoughts, and that they drove me insane. And I had to quiet my brain. And how would I do that? Well, I had to take something. I had to do something about that. Some behavior, some kind of substance. When the substance wasn't there, it was behavior. And that played out a little bit, I would say, even in early recovery. But I find over time, and I find in particular the practice of that step of quieting the mind daily, to the best of my ability, can by far not say that I do it daily. There are rush days I don't get it done, but I build it up then on other days when I have time. I'll spend a good deal of time. My joke is I'm kind of like a camel spiritually. I kind of fill up my hump certain days. And but for the most part, I would say that that's really enriched my life to a degree I really can't even explain. It's probably the most important relationship that I have, is that relationship with a power greater than myself, and to stay close, because that is the solution. You know, I learned early on, as I went through this stuff, I just look back on it, I'm like, how did I stay sober? I don't understand this, you know. This time, why this time, you know? So there's no answer. The answer is, it's got to be God, because I didn't do it. People helped me. People were there for me, but I, of my own accord, of my own will, I would not be sober today if it weren't for God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and everyone here who has, you know, been on my path and who has helped me so much. All of you, even people I don't know. You know, the energy that we send out when we get sober and go to meetings, I think is global. I think it has a much larger effect than we know. The power of many. And that is pretty much my story. And I think I'm going to talk a little bit about something else. Some things that happened, you know, with the step, having a spiritual awakening from the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous was really significant. And the obsession to drink was removed. And that's beautiful. And I got involved in AA. I went to meetings a lot early on. And I also got into service. And I always talk about service, because service, I think, and keeping the three sides of the triangle, the three legs, is recovery, unity, and service and play have also kept me sober. There were times when, you know, things weren't going so well in fellowship, things weren't going so well in my recovery. Maybe I feel at peace, but you know what? The service piece, I always had to show up, and you know that helped build my esteem, because I showed up. I'm not a shower-upper. I'm really not. That's not me. And So the service, you know, just starting out making coffee, talking to people, saying hello. That's how it started out, being friendly. And then, you know, a few opportunities were dropped in my lap to be a general service representative. And, you know, I didn't know anything about that, but they asked me to do it. So I said, okay, sure, I don't know what that is, but yeah, that's great, I'll do that. And I did it. And then, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, that's like a 2-year commitment, right? Okay, so I'll be sober for 2 years, I guess, off the shop. And that's just something like how this brain works, you know? You please on all the angles. So it worked, though. And then, you know, through that, through doing general service, I really learned a ton about the history of AA and about the patients and about the concept. So what's really cool about this program is the guys, everybody, and the girls who started it had a bit of divine inspiration, and they worked out a lot of issues early on and set down on paper for us. And there are really 36 principles of the program. The steps are 12, and the traditions are 12, and then there's the concepts for general service. And they're really, really quite brilliant. And so I just like to talk a little bit about the traditions, because something keeping them in play also, I think that they apply to our lives individually as well. And they work so very well in service. I'm a big, big fan of the home group and, you know, being of service in some way or another. And in any group of human beings gathered, there will be issues. And we have these beautiful traditions laid out for us to keep things clean. And we have a way of referring to them when we have troubles in our groups. And I think that they work brilliantly, and I think that they help to keep us humble. I think every aspect of them is an aspect of growing humility. And I really just have the utmost respect for the traditions and how the groups work and how we can stay well and move toward wholeness, both as a group and as individuals, you know, through the steps and through the traditions. Yeah, this thing is really so much bigger than us. You know, this is how I started this, you know, just looking out here at all these faces, you know. And it's really an absolute miracle to see some of you, you know, here tonight. And think about it, I mean, nobody sets rules here. Nobody governs this. There's no boss that tells us we have to be here. But every night you come, every Monday night you come, coffee is made, doors are open, the lights are on. You know, and what do we want to do here? We want to keep our primary purpose alive. We want to help other people. Where else in the world? Where can you find something like that? Like, wow. Yeah. Wow. You saved my life, you know. And I can stand here today as a woman of dignity and honor when I told you a little bit about how I came in here, you know. It's not a woman of dignity and honor. And I'm just one of a million stories of how this works. And it's all individual. We have a beautiful manual, the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And someone who's been through that book and can take you through it is awesome. But recovery is individual. You know, each person has their own journey. And as you grow in conscious contact with a power greater than yourself, your recovery will grow and grow logarithmically, I think. And that's the beauty of it. It's like I had to learn to take my recovery as my own responsibility, and others do certain things. Everybody does things a little bit differently. We have a basic outline, and where this thing has led me is crazy, man. You know, it's like I do really cool things now in terms of developing a spiritual life. I never did go to church much, but I found this sweat lodge experience. And it's really significant to me, because as I was telling you, I had a little bit of trouble with the God thing. Couldn't connect to this Judeo-Christian idea from a guy with a beard on his tie. Really hard for me to relate to that. And so I don't know how, but somehow I came across the sweat lodge and I started to go into it. And what it is essentially to me is American ceremony. Sweat lodge, you go in there for 2 hours, you sweat, and we pray. That's all we do. It's a communal prayer and purification process. And through that process, I freely developed a prayer practice that has become really, really very authentic to me. It's really real. And I'll tell you, I was just talking to a girl on the way over here in AA. We were talking about this, and I'm like, you know what? If I really think about it in my prayers, every single prayer I ever had was answered. Every one. And, you know, I'm talking about prayers like, you know, the authentic prayers. I mean, they were clumsy and awkward at first, and prayers just to whatever, stop my head from going crazy and stay sober and all that good stuff. But then they started to be, you know, about getting stuff, and I realized, like, my prayers are really kind of about still me, about me getting what I want. And then through this practice and through other prayer practices that I do, I started developing into something else. I started developing into more of a non-self prayer, prayer for love, prayer for service, and mostly always, you know, I will say I start my prayers with a prayer of thanksgiving, I call it. And it's just being it's thankful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for today. Thank you for your sobriety. Thank you for the people in my life. And that is something that really just occurred to me, was what it all boils down to. Happiest people I've ever known in the world, inside and outside of AA, were the ones that were thankful and the ones that forgave. And that's something that this program taught me too. I didn't know how to do that. No idea how to do that really, truly in my heart. And that's really an amazing thing. It's just, you know, growing up and becoming whole, working towards that, started here. It started with just walking in the door. And for that, you know, I'll forever be grateful. Working with others, practicing these principles in all our affairs. Not so easy, but probably the greatest reward from that. Challenging, growthful opportunities abound in recovery. Yeah, there are certain points where it's like, oh God, another growth opportunity. Don't think I need one of those. But there they came anyway. And yeah, so I mean, basically I would say, in a nutshell, I can't really thank this program enough. I found a solution here to my alcoholism. I actually experienced peace of mind and serenity today without the use of a substance. Through the awakening I've had, I'm able to healthy relationships, love, I don't think I ever really knew what love was before, until now, and it's always unconditional. That is the definition of love. There was no way I could do that. So, in closing, I'd like to say thank you. Thank you all. Thank you all for listening.
Before we close this evening, we have a special announcement. Shelly.
It's an anniversary.
Jeff here, celebrating 7 years of coming around and helping others. He's my sponsor, and every year I get up here, I don't know how many years now, and give him his coin, and I'm thinking, boy, what can I say that's any different? She was talking about love, and I just listened to Jeff speak down in Lancaster, and we took a little trip, and that's what he talks about. That's a big part of his story, how he hated everybody and everything, and then, you know, it all just changed through doing the steps and helping others to this love of that came from God that he just spreads out to others and spreads out to me, and you know it's real because he can love me unconditionally, so that takes a lot. So he has 7 years, and I got a special coin. He's been working with me 4 years now, and it's been a great path. He's taught me how to work with others. I watch him, and it's easy to learn how to do it through what he does and what he does. So God gave him to me, and I didn't really have a choice, so I'm blessed.
I'm going to read this quote real quick. To me, it sums up this. It's a quote by this guy named William Blake, who's a poet back in the mid-1700s. He looks like mid-1700s to early 1800s. He was a poet, painter, philosopher. And this sums up AA to me, this whole spiritual path. It says, "I sought my soul I could not see. I sought my God, but my God eluded me. I sought my brother and found all through." And I have truly found that here at this group in AA. I've watched people walk before me that taught me how to love people that I don't necessarily like, which is not always an easy thing, how to forgive people that I don't want to forgive, and most of all, how to help people that I don't necessarily want to help. And I watched, like Joe said, when she was saying, I watch people do that for me, and I see their feet, and I just follow that path. And it's not always easy. But for me, this power that I was lacking when I got here, I experienced it through you guys. And I think all the steps that was unblocking from you, and then I experienced that power. And I experience it every day on a daily basis. Doesn't mean every day that my life is perfect. It's not. But I can do those things. I can love others, be of service, forgive others. And generally, my days look pretty good. And I experience that peace and serenity that she talked about so eloquently. Just that ability to be right where I am and be okay with it. I could never do that. The only time I could do that was when I was in. So, you know, when you talk about a new solution, that is absolutely what I found here. And I'll just end with this, that the only requirement for me to do these things that I didn't think were going to work were absolute, absolute desperation. I think that is the number one requirement to get into that, is sheer desperation. And I thank God that I had that when I walked back from there at 8 a.m. August 1, 2007. Because if I didn't have it, I wouldn't be here standing here today. I'm telling you, when I was in it, did not feel good. But I look back on it today, and it's absolutely required. And I'm grateful for that experience. And I just want to thank every home group member and all you guys. You know, I met some friends here that I have relationships with today, but I just never dreamed of. So, thanks.